All right, today is September 26, 2013. My name is Emily Jacobson. I'm with the New York Public Library, and I am interviewing Andrea Figueroa. Can you tell me a little bit about how you decided to enlist?
Well, when I was little, I always wanted to fly the planes. Mm-hmm. It was either that or be a veterinarian. And I realized I couldn't take the sight of blood, so I was like, my second choice was to go into the military. My grandfather was a merchant marine, mm-hmm. and I had an uncle that was in the Air Force, so it was always like there. Mm-hmm. I have a cousin that went into the Marines as well, and I had another one that went in, but she didn't make it past boot camp, so. Mm-hmm. But I went when I was about 19, mm-hmm. right after high school. I just signed up. My mom wasn't too happy about it, but I told her, you know, you knew this was something that I always kind of looked into or everything. Mm-hmm. And I went straight after high school pretty much. Oh. And I had to wait about 8 or 9 months before I can go in. Mm-hmm. And I was on the delayed enlistment program. Mm-hmm. And I had one of the best recruiters ever. He was very honest. And he was one of those people who was straightforward. And he was actually when the recruiting office was here on Fordham and Concourse. Uh-huh. It was over there. And I remember he would call me every Saturday, like 9 o'clock in the morning. Like, you coming? You need to come here. You need to work out. He made sure everybody worked out. We would go by the park over there on University. He'd make mm-hmm. us run 4 laps, do all these push-ups and sit-ups. And it's just like, oh, God. And he's like, you know, you're going to have to do this in boot camp. Mm-hmm. So every Saturday for 9 months. And then he would call during the week to make sure that I was working out and make sure this is still what I wanted to do and everything. So I had a really good recruiter. Mm-hmm. And he didn't sugarcoat anything. He basically prepared everyone who was waiting to go in, you know, for what was going to happen. Mm-hmm. And I was very grateful when I got there because people were dropping, trying to run. Yeah. And I'm over here like, you know, I can do these 4 laps. I'm good. I think he had to run like a mile or so every day. We had to do it, getting up at 5 o'clock. And it was nervous. I was nervous going in. But I just kept telling myself, it's only 6 weeks. Yeah. It's just 6 weeks. You know, I could do 6 weeks. I'm from New York. I can handle it.
Where was your basic training?
It was in San Antonio, Texas, okay. in Lackland Air Force Base. Mm-hmm. And I met some pretty interesting people there.
Yeah.
A lot of people from very small towns. Mm-hmm. Didn't get out much. So it was just like a big shock for them. Mm-hmm. I think culture-wise as well. And it was interesting to meet people like that. You mm-hmm. know, coming from New York, especially from the five boroughs, it's just like you meet everybody.
Right.
From all walks of life. So, you know, nothing really phases you. But I was surprised about that one. And it was interesting. It was nice. It wasn't... not that basic training was nice. They were hard.
Yeah.
But it was nice in a sense that it was different, and I felt like I was doing something
yeah.
important. Mm-hmm. You know, you go in there with your intentions of, you know, it's like, oh, I'm just going to get college. I'm just going to go to school, and that's it. But, you know, it winded up being more than that. Mm-hmm. You know, once you get to your first base and you actually realize what you're doing and stuff like that, the importance of it, it becomes more than that. You know, you kind of like your perspective changes and everything.
Mm-hmm. So from basic training, did you pick a specialty or?
Actually, you do that when you sign up.
Okay.
Once you pass the ASVAB test, mm-hmm. And your recruiter gets your score back, they bring out this huge book. Mm-hmm. And like, okay, this is what you qualify for. Mm-hmm. And so I had a number of choices, and I chose to be a radio communicator. Mm-hmm. Looked like something interesting. And it was either that or become a SP, which is a cop in the military. Mm-hmm. And I didn't think I wanted to do that, so yeah. I went with the radio operator job. And after basic training, I went to Mississippi for about almost 2 months. Mm-hmm. That's where you go to train for your job, mm-hmm. tech school. And that's completely different from basic training.
Yeah.
Basic training, you know, everybody's telling you what to do, and, you know, you can't look the wrong way, you can't breathe wrong or anything. And in tech school, you know, they're like, hey, how you doing? And you're just like, what, you talking to me? No. You know, you're like, you don't want to answer because you think you're going to get in trouble. But it wasn't like that. It was basically, now you're just going to your school, and it kind of, you know, you have a responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
Even though they're still there, you still kind of, it was more or less, you know, you went from this, you know, being in this little enclosed place with all these people where you're just like, oh, I can go here by myself without anyone? Wow, okay. So that was interesting. I met a lot of people mm-hmm. from there too. And I actually met one of my best friends there.
Okay.
We wound up getting both sent to Alaska.
Oh.
That was our first assignment together.
Mm-hmm.
And we actually ended up as roommates.
Mm-hmm.
So that worked out. And that's where we ended up. I ended up in Alaska, which I wasn't happy about.
Where in Alaska were you?
Anchorage.
Okay, so you were in the city at least.
Yeah, I was in Elmendorf.
Mm-hmm.
And it was nice to know that my best friend was going to be there.
Yeah.
So I already had my roommate because she actually got there before I did. And we were there for about 2.5 years. And they actually winded up closing that site down
mm-hmm.
for the radio communicators. And then our next base was Florida. So we wound up going to Florida together as well,
wow.
which was pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
And so, we ended up at Herbert Field, and then that was it.
What was your day-to-day like in Alaska? What were you responsible for?
It was cold.
Yeah.
That was number one. But we would work 12-hour shifts,
mm-hmm.
3 days on, 3 days off, and we would switch every 2 months, so 2 months days, 2 months nights.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't bad. It was just something to adjust to in the beginning. It took a while, but you wind up, you know, making the most of it, and I had really good supervisors, and
mm-hmm.
you know, later on down the line, you hear horror stories, oh, you know, I didn't like it, and my first base, you know, wasn't great, and people acted this way or that way, and I didn't have that experience. I actually had really good people. I had a great supervisor. I had great people that I worked with,
mm-hmm.
and they made the most out of it, you
mm-hmm.
know, when there's nothing going on, it's like, well, let's do this, or, you know, let's teach you that, and whether I wanted to learn it or not, they made it fun.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't like how most people, well, not most people, but some people would say, you know, it's really strict or anything like that. But, you know, I think it's all about who you work with.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a really great group of people when I got to Alaska that I worked with.
So what did you like better, days or nights?
Nights.
Yeah?
Yeah, because upper management wasn't. Because when you're there, you know, you have to keep your, you got to be straight, you got to be, you know, your uniform has to look good and everything. But, you know, at nighttime, it was more laid back.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we still got our work done, but it was just more, a more easygoing vibe.
Mm-hmm.
You know, during the day, it's yes sir, no sir. And then, you know, at nighttime, it's like, you know, you're working with the people that you're used to working with. So
yeah.
It was much more laid back. So I definitely like nights better.
Mm-hmm. And then, what do you do for fun in Alaska?
That's a good question. on Elmendorf, it was, they actually had their own ski lodge thing.
Oh, nice.
So you can go skiing for very cheap.
Mm-hmm.
They had a snowmobile trail
mm-hmm.
On the back of the base. They had that. I think a lot of people just went to the little clubs off
yeah.
base and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
They had that. And there was actually a little club they had on base
mm-hmm.
that a lot of people went to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you just kind of mingle with everybody else in the base. And Elmendorf is actually attached to the Army base.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a really huge base. And sometimes they would come over and, you know, you can go over there. And so, you know, you kind of just meet different people. It was just such a huge base.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, 2.5 years and I still don't know half of, you know, what's on there and everything like that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just a... And a lot of times you just hang out in the dorms,
mm-hmm.
you know, they had like a common area and, you know, people watch movies and stuff like that. You just kind of hang out, get to know everybody that you're living with.
Mm-hmm. And what was the hardest thing to adjust to, not being in New York anymore?
That I wasn't in New York. Alaska is so different as far as the environment,
mm-hmm.
you know. I remember people used to be like, oh, you know, you're from New York, you're from the North, you should be used to the cold. And I'm like, no, minus 30 degrees is not anything to be used to. It doesn't get that cold in New York. I think I missed being able to just leave at my own leisure as far as like public transportation. Mm-hmm. They don't have that in Alaska. Everybody usually has cars. And just the diversity of the things you can do. Mm-hmm. You know, there wasn't much to do up there at the time. Mm-hmm. Unless you're a very outdoors person, mm-hmm. you know, hiking and fishing and all that stuff. And if that's not stuff you're into, then it's just like you're kind of stuck.
Yeah.
Doing the same stuff all the time. Whereas here in New York, you can go anywhere, you can do anything. So that was a big adjustment.
Mm-hmm. And then, so after Alaska, you went
to Florida.
To Florida.
I was in Herbert Field, Florida. That's in Fort Walton Beach in the Panhandle.
Mm-hmm.
And that was an adjustment as well because I was used to the cold. When I finally got used to Alaska, okay. It's like, oh, okay, and I'm going to Florida, and it's like cold. Heat wave.
Yeah.
So, it was sick for a little while. But I adjusted. I actually adjusted rather quickly because the base was near the beach.
Mm-hmm.
And so, that's where I spent my weekends. Nice. At the beach. Mm-hmm. So, it was an easier adjustment.
And were you doing the same kind of work?
No, actually, I wasn't. When I was in Alaska, we were at a fixed station, being mm-hmm. a radio communicator. And what that means is that we provided service to any DOD or non-DOD aircrafts, ships, anyone that had any type of information they needed to pass and stuff like that. And we would get it over the airwaves.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't just, and it could have been Navy, Marines, Army, Coast Guard, could have been anyone.
Mm-hmm.
Or even like civilian planes and stuff like that. If they, let's say like they had an emergency, we would pick it up and help mm-hmm. them out. When I got to Florida, Herbert Field is a tactical base.
Mm-hmm.
So basically people, even down to the chef, everyone gets deployed
mm-hmm.
at that base. And it's smaller. Excuse me. And it was basically just, you know, it was a base where it was a training base. And you would we would go out. We had designated pilots
mm-hmm.
for our squadron, for our unit. So whenever they went out, they had to send out a communications team first
mm-hmm.
to set up comm and stuff like that. And so we were specifically just for that particular set of pilots
mm-hmm.
for that. I believe for the base. So whenever our pilots went out from the base, we would go out with them.
Mm-hmm.
Or actually before them, because we had to set up the communications, and we had portable antennas, radios, and stuff like that. We had to know different radio frequencies
mm-hmm.
and everything. So we were out a lot. We always had somebody out. There was never anyone there for too long,
mm-hmm.
especially if, you know, especially the young ones.
Yeah.
So, it's like...
And where would you go?
We did a lot of training exercises,
mm-hmm.
a lot of them stateside. I went to a couple stateside, in Washington and Nevada,
mm-hmm.
and it was just training. Usually they do the training stateside, did
mm-hmm.
Simulated situations and stuff like that, just to give you a taste of what it will be once you go out on a real, TDY.
Mm-hmm.
And, some people went to South America,
mm-hmm.
some Africa.
Wow.
Some people went to, where else would they go? They would go to the Middle East and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So they would just go different places and different locations, to set up, you know, to set up for their stuff and everything. And then when the war came about, you know, it was really scarce
mm-hmm.
in there because they just had teams everywhere.
Yeah.
So it was like, you really didn't, it's like, hear a pin drop in there. It's like, where's everybody? You had no equipment to train with.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everybody took the equipment because you have to have your equipment and you have to have backup equipment just in case. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, that really changed a lot after that, like
mm-hmm.
after 9/11 and everything, and then after they started setting up the Iraq war and everything. So it was a lot. Like, it just changed everything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's people that you hadn't seen in months because they're just out there, whatever.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
What was it like being in the States while everyone else was getting deployed?
It was kind of like like, you want to go because it's like, you know, I want to go. Because I used to be like, I want to go. And they're like, no, you need training mm-hmm. and stuff like that. You know, they always send their people that have the experience out first. Mm-hmm. So the ones that were left behind were the ones that just needed, you know, the most training and everything like that. And so it was a little scary, too, because it was just like, you want to go. And then at the same time, it's just like, dude, I don't want to get sent to Afghanistan or anything. But, you know, we had teams that were there that, you know, were making me having these experiences and stuff like that. So it was just more, I think it was just more of a duty to just, you know, want to go and help and everything like that.
Yeah.
And then just sitting around not doing anything, you know, you kind of feel a little helpless.
Mm-hmm.
You know, your fellow airmen are out there, you know, risking their lives, and you're just sitting back, just
yeah.
waiting for somebody to, you know, either say, okay, you're going to replace so-and-so, and it's just like, yeah, I get to, you know, do something now. I get to help,
mm-hmm.
you know. So it is a bunch of mixed emotions at the time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Did your friend stay with you the whole time?
She actually was deployed before I got a chance to be deployed.
Mm-hmm.
And we stood at Florida the whole time. I actually got out the military before she did.
Mm-hmm.
But she was deployed before me. Her first time being deployed was before me, and I would talk to her all the time, and she would just like, you know, she was like, I don't know about this. But she winded up not liking it, but just feeling like, you know, this is what it is. This
yeah.
is what I signed up for. This is what it is. And you know, it's always different when you're going, especially during a war.
Mm-hmm.
It's one thing when you're going to do a job or something, or you're helping with the, you know, the pilots that we have, but this was different.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just that you're going out with the pilots, you're going out to fight a war.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, there's very little room for error in that sense.
Yeah.
So, but she was okay with it. I think she went back again, actually.
Mm-hmm.
She went twice before I got to go.
And when did you finally get to go?
I went in 2003,
mm-hmm.
from January to April. And
where were you stationed?
Hmm?
Where did you get sent?
Uzbekistan.
Mm.
So I was just up here, and everybody's like down here, and mm-hmm. it's just, you know. It was just basically, we were sent there to just monitor the airwaves and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And we had some pilots that were there, so we had to go with them. Mm-hmm. And that was just somewhere where we just, it wasn't really action like that, but we could hear them over the radios.
Mm-hmm.
And you can hear the bombs dropping.
Oh, wow.
And so, yeah, it was scary because it was just like, you know, I hope that's nowhere near them and, you know, where they're at.
Mm-hmm.
And then that was it. It's just, you know, just listening out and just supporting. It was more like a support thing.
Yeah.
You know, we weren't anywhere classified or to, you know, anywhere where it's like a war zone or anything. We were just there for like support.
Mm-hmm.
It was basically like the pilots would come there to, I guess, rest and recuperate,
mm-hmm.
and then they'd fly back out.
Yeah.
And we were just there for the support. It was like a support thing.
Mm-hmm. What's Uzbekistan like?
We weren't allowed off base, so I have no idea.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a little cold,
mm-hmm.
and then towards the end, it kind of warmed up. The people are really nice there.
Mm-hmm.
It was a really nice base.
Mm-hmm.
It was nice. But we weren't allowed off the base, so we just hung out on base and just got to know everyone and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Did you serve with a lot of other women?
Yeah, there was a lot of women
mm-hmm.
there. There was a lot of women there. There was a lot of just women, females in the military, period. You know, I've seen, I've met women from the Army.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you kind of, when you go on these deployments, you kind of meet people from different
mm-hmm.
Branches. And so everybody has their convictions about Air Force, whatever. But, you know, when it comes to doing the job, everybody's just one.
Yeah.
You know? So it wasn't, you see a lot of females, though.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of females out there that are trying to just, you know, do their job just as well as the men, you know, sometimes even better.
And do you feel like you were treated differently at all?
No. I what's going on these days, you know, I'm actually shocked. I didn't experience any of those things.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm grateful for that. And I, at the same time, I feel horrible for the women that are going through that.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a horrible thing because when you're the military, it's one, you know, you're one thing, one unit, you know, you everybody's doing their job to protect the country. No one should be treated like that.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I'm grateful that I did not have any of those experiences.
Mm-hmm. And after you finished your time in Uzbekistan, what happened next?
I got sent back home. I got sent back to Florida. And I had to make a decision on whether or not I wanted to re-enlist.
Mm-hmm.
And I chose not to. So I got out in October of that year.
Mm-hmm. What made you decide not to re-enlist?
It's a couple of factors. Well, I have a daughter, and I actually had her when I was in Alaska.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was a big issue for me. At the time, I didn't really have anyone to watch her while mm-hmm. I was going back and forth. So I didn't want to go on another tour and have to worry about her.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a big decision. It was like, you know, do I stay and deal with it, or do I leave and just raise my daughter? And I chose to raise my daughter.
Did you come back to New York?
Mm-hmm. Okay, I've been here ever since.
When you got out, how was it adjusting back to civilian life?
I don't think it was that bad. It wasn't... I think it was more on a personal level, it was hard.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as like out into the world, you know, I don't think I was away for so long because I would always come home like holidays and stuff
mm-hmm.
like that. So I don't feel like I was away for that long to have that type of shock. It's like I'm used to this, but now I have to deal with this. I had a job within a month or two after I came out.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't hard. What I do say is that it did change me as in a way that I think I was more disciplined
mm-hmm.
and I was more structured in everything that I did. And, you know, as far as personal goes, that was more of a struggle because when I came back, it was more like, hey, guys, I'm back. And my friends were just like, oh, okay. But, you know, it's like they forgot that I was back. So
yeah.
What I was used to before I went in was, you know, like calling every day, talking to everybody. It was just like, you know, I don't hear from anyone.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone's busy. Everyone kind of went on with their lives. And I think that's a big thing to deal with.
Yeah.
You know, when you're getting out, it's just like, well, the world went on without you here. You know, it's kind of like, well, did you guys even miss me?
Yeah.
It's just like, yeah, we missed you. So we got stuff that we need to do. And it's just like, oh, okay. And it was a big adjustment. And it took a long time to adjust to that. And I think it took, you know, my friends and family a long time to adjust
mm-hmm.
to me being back. Because I wasn't the same person I was when I left.
Yeah.
And I came back with a child. I came back with more maturity. I came back, you know, with more... of a different vibe, and you know, it took them a while to adjust as well.
Yeah.
So.
What if you had advice for people who are thinking of enlisting now?
Mm-hmm.
What would it be?
Make sure it's what you want to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, don't. It's not for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
I know people that went in and they did maybe a week or two of basic training, and they just couldn't take it. And that's in the Air Force. I know the Marines and the Army, their basic training is really tough,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I don't know about the Navy, but, you know, not to say that the Air Force is the lightest one either, but at the time it was only 6 weeks,
mm-hmm.
you know, as opposed to Marines, I think it's 3 months,
mm-hmm.
I know Army's long,
mm-hmm.
so, you know, when you compare it to that as far as length, time-wise, for me it was just, you know, I just kept telling myself, well, it's only 6 weeks, you know, I can do this, you know, can't let them get to me or anything like that. And it's just it was just a different thing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Are there habits from your military life that you've carried with you?
Yeah.
Like what?
Yeah, my bed has to be perfectly made. I have to have my corners.
Mm-hmm.
Do
you bounce the quarter?
No, I don't bounce the quarter. I that's the only thing I don't do, but everything has to be tight and tucked in.
Mm-hmm.
The way I view certain things as far as, like, I feel like whether I'm, even though I'm a female, I feel like I can do just as much as some, like, a man can.
Mm-hmm.
I think that, you know, like I said before, like, just being disciplined and everything, I don't think I had that when I went in,
mm-hmm.
and coming out, I definitely have it. And just wanting to do things that are more meaningful,
mm-hmm.
you know, because you have that sense of not just security when you're in the military, but you have that sense of, you know, that you're doing something really important, you know, and you're a part of something. And so when you come home, it's just like, you know, I'm working for this company. What are they really doing? Like, I don't feel like this is important, you know. And when I think, you know, I don't know about anyone else, but for myself, it was just like, I want to do something important because I was used to it.
Yeah.
You know, when you're in the military, it's like, listen, we're defending the country, you know, taking care of this equipment. We got this, we got that. Everybody plays their part.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter, even if you're a cook, postal service, you know, people need the mail, you know, they need that encouragement from their family. People want to, you know, they want a good meal, so, you know, you want to make sure you got the best meal
mm-hmm.
possible for, you know, the people that are going out, you know, the soldiers that are going out into the field, you know, you want to make sure that they're fed well, you know, so everyone, that's what you're taught, everyone plays their part, no matter how little you may think it is or not, but
mm-hmm.
it all adds up,
mm-hmm.
you know, and every part is crucial, so it's just like, you know, I don't think you get that feeling too much when you come out and you, unless, of course, you have a job where that's what you're doing, you know, you're kind of contributing to making a difference.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I take away from it.
How do you feel being treated as a veteran? Do you feel you get treated differently, or?
I do get treated differently, and it makes me feel good, because
mm-hmm.
I feel like people respect you more,
mm-hmm.
you know. I remember being in Florida, and a lot of these bases, the towns are built around them. And so the people really appreciate you.
Mm-hmm.
When I come back from New York, it's just like, oh, you're a veteran? Oh, okay. But you go to these other places, and they're like, you're a veteran? Oh, thank you. I don't know how many times I've been thanked. You know, especially going off base, like, I'm just on my lunchtime, you
mm-hmm.
know, and I'm just going to get something to eat, and they see the uniform, and they're like, thank you. Thank you so much for protecting us, and thank you for everything that you've done. And I'm just like, I'm just coming to get something to eat. I've been sitting in the training room all day.
Yeah.
Not the one you need to be thanking, but, you know,
yeah.
I'll take it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are people out there doing a lot more. But, you know, it feels good, though.
Mm-hmm.
It feels good when people recognize that and they appreciate it, you know, because those soldiers are out there risking their lives for everything.
Yeah.
Just so we can sit here and do what we're doing now.
Mm-hmm. And what about keeping in touch with people? Do you still keep in touch with friends you've been?
I do. Everybody's harassing me. I don't get on. I'm not on Facebook. So everybody's on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
I'm old school. I like to pick up a telephone and talk to people.
Mm-hmm.
You know. So it's just like, you need to get on Facebook. And I'm just like, it's been like 3-4 years now. I'm not getting on. If I haven't gotten on it now, back then, it's not happening. But I do call. I don't keep in contact with everyone.
Mm-hmm.
I've kind of lost contact with some people. But the ones I was really close to, I definitely keep in contact with. Like, my best friend now, she's in Washington. And I talk to her, like, probably on a weekly basis and stuff like that. And she's actually still in the military.
That's great.
Yeah, so she's there. And she, you know, I'm so proud of her. Because she, you know, she stuck through it and stuff like that. And there were times when she wanted to leave herself. And it was just like, you know, is that what you really want to do? It's like, no.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes you got to stick it out. You know, it's not always. Sometimes you get a great base
mm-hmm.
with great people. Sometimes you'll get a unit with just wonderful people that will do anything and everything to make sure that, you know, you're at your best.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you're grateful for it. And then there are some places, some units where it's just like, you know, you get that discrimination because you're a female or something like that. And grateful, thankfully, I've never had that.
Mm-hmm.
But I know people that have had that experience. And it's sad.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it shouldn't be that way. But, you know, I knew of one Master Sergeant, I believe he was, a Tech Sergeant. And he did not feel like women should be in the military. He was very, not that he was vocal about it, but, you know, you got that feeling from it.
Mm-hmm.
So it was just like, you know, we're here, you're about to retire, so just go about your business, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Women are the driving force. Not the driving force just for the military, but, you know, they're doing just as much, or maybe even more, you know. So, I mean, if somebody's shooting at you and there's a woman next to you with a gun, I'm sure you're going to want her to help you shoot back.
Yeah.
You know, you guys got to kind of protect each other.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Is there anything else you like to add?
No, I think I had, it was a great experience, and I do wish that I had been able to stay.
Mm-hmm.
I would have been doing my 20 years almost.
Wow.
Yeah, and that's what I wanted to do. That was my goal,
mm-hmm.
do my 20, be an officer, but it didn't work out that way. But I am grateful for my experience and the time that I had there. I met a lot of wonderful people there, and you just come away from it just feeling good when you have the good experiences.
Yeah.
Like I've had, you know, it makes you want to, you know, it's like you root for everybody else that's in there,
mm-hmm.
you know, makes you proud. So I'm pretty proud of it.
Great. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
I really appreciate it.